Good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. I want to thank the organizers for having me here today to talk about the Latino Health Initiative and how we go about achieving health inequity in our community. I think I had to do this disclaimer, so I have really no relationships to this clause. Okay, let me start with giving you a quick overview of the Latino community in the United States. Currently, 16% of the U.S. population is Latino, and it's a very heterogeneous population comprised of several groups that come from North, Central, South America, and the Caribbean. And one of the key things is that Latinos are the fastest growing group in the entire nation. It is estimated by the year 2050, one in every three individuals living in the United States will be Latino. In Montgomery County, Maryland is the home to approximately 1 million people. Out of those, about 164,000 are Latinos, and we constitute about 17% of the county's population. This meant a growth of about 64% in a 10-year period from 2000 to 2010. And just to say, this is in comparison to other cities across the country and other jurisdictions, it's pretty small. I know in the state of Maryland, we have other jurisdictions where the population has grown by 230%. There's other parts of the country where it's just the increase is tremendous. Now, I'm just going to give you a very quick overview of some of the assets and some of the profiles of our community. Latinos that have come into Montgomery County have recently arrived, and they're mainly from Central and South America. So many of them have limited English proficiency. They're a young population with a medium age that is about 10 years less than the county's total overall medium age. And about 17% of Latino households are pretty poor. They make less than $25,000 compared to 6.7% of all the county households. The other thing is that keeping in mind, Latino households tend to be very large, larger than your normal or your overall population. I shouldn't say normal, like we're abnormal. I like to talk about assets too, because when we're developing programs, and we need to be thinking about needs, but I think asset-based programs also take into consideration what the community can contribute, and I think that they're important to take into account. So Latinos in the county, for the most part, share a common language, which is Spanish. We have a cadre of very trained, well-trained, experienced, and underutilized professionals. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. We have a well-established media that includes TV, radio, and print media. And we have a robust network of community-based organizations and leaders that can support the cause for Latino health. Now, in terms of barriers to health services, and I'm just picking some here, the lack of health insurance, the inability to pay for health care, and logistical barriers, such as the ones that are described in the slide, in addition to fear to access services due to the anti-immigrant climate, come together to form barriers that hinders the Latino community ability to access health care. The other part that we can talk about is the issue that there is a lack of awareness regarding primary prevention, and that for some segment of the population, low literacy levels pose a challenge. Now, about the Latino Health Initiative, we were established in the year 2000, also established by the County Executive and County Council, and we are part of the Department of Health and Human Services within Montgomery County. The initiative is comprised of employees from the Department of Health and Human Services, such as myself, and a cadre of about 17 volunteers who have expertise on Latino issues at the national, state, and local levels. The Health Steering Committee actually provides technical assistance and support to the LHI, to us, and the most important function is that they serve as an advocacy arm. So they engage elected officials, senior members of the administration to actually advocate on behalf of the community, something that I am not able to do as a county employee. (Clears throat) The LHI model is basically based on an ecological model that seeks to influence the systems that impact health, well-being, and equity. So it is very systems-oriented. It's not a disease medical model. And we have some of our core principles here. I just want to highlight a couple of them. One of them being the active participation of the community in identifying problems and posing solutions to address these problems. And also, I want to highlight the importance of developing, to the extent possible, comprehensive and integrated approaches so that we can tackle health problems, health disparities, inequities from a variety of angles. Now, we have seven priority areas that you can read over here. What I think is important is that you understand how we arrive at these seven priority areas. These priority areas were selected after a comprehensive assessment that was carried out by the Latino Health Initiative staff and the steering committee. We did more than 100 individuals that provided input through a community-based participatory process to select our priorities. And each of the priority areas has specific policy recommendations on how to address them. So the results of the assessment, the priority areas, and the policy recommendations are all integrated into this document here. It's called the Blueprint for Latino Health in Montgomery County. If you want copies of it, you can access it through our website. Okay, so that's just to give you a sense of how we arrived at the priorities. I'm going to very quickly talk about some of the strategies that we have, diverse programs that we have currently in the community. Won't elaborate too much on each of them, but let me start with our asthma program. Our asthma program focuses on parents and caregivers of children with asthma ages 5 to 11. These individuals go through an 8-week, 2-hour-long educational sessions based on a curriculum that was developed by the Latino Health Initiative for the particular target population. Social support is provided to the participants by volunteer nurses in between sessions. So they reinforce educational messages. They talk to the parents about how to navigate the system, how to work with healthcare providers, and also to invite the parents to come to the session. And what you can see is it's a pretty successful program. In the past year, 29% of the parents that participated reported a decrease in visits to the emergency department related to asthma, and there was an 85% increase in parent self-efficacy to manage the child's asthma. Our smoking cessation program is the only program in Maryland that is specifically tailored to the needs of Spanish-speaking individuals. They go through a whole process of 6 weeks to quit smoking, and we have, at the end of the 6 weeks, about 90% of these participants actually had quit smoking. The Ama Tu Vida Health Festival, the main goal is to increase access to care of uninsured and underinsured and to promote health through free screening services and education to support healthy behaviors. We conduct this health festival every year with the support of 30 to 50 public and private partner organizations and about 300 to 400 volunteers. The key thing is that when we provide the screening services for those people who have abnormal results, we ensure that by the end of the fair that they have an appointment to a community health clinic in the area so that they can be followed up and get into care. So that's pretty unique. We don't send people saying you have high blood pressure, go deal with it. We connect them to a community clinic. And we also do some other educational activities. In this picture we show we had a soccer tournament that draws a lot of youth and men into the health fair. And as you can see, we have served several thousand individuals in the past 5 annual festivals, about 13,000 individuals, and we provided over 11,000 screenings. As the other two sister initiatives, we have a health promoter program. I'm not going to go into a lot because I think my colleagues describe very well what the health promoter does, and it's basically the same infrastructure. But I think what is critical to know, again, is that the way we train our health promoters, the way they do their outreach is very culturally tailored to the populations that they are to serve. So the curriculum that we have developed and all the strategies that we have are specific for the population that the promoters reach. One of the things they do is they do weekly walks in neighborhoods or schools. These weekly walks are about 8 weeks in a row. And so at the end of the sessions, we saw a 19% increase in physical activity of the individuals that were participating in the walks. One of the good things that we're very proud of is that we have about 78% retention rate of the health promoters. We have promoters that have been with us for over 10 years, and they're still there. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the Welcome Back Center for Internationally Trained Health Professionals. This is a particular effort that focuses on diversifying the workforce. So basically, the Welcome Back Center builds on assets of internationally trained health professionals who are currently underemployed and on many occasions not working in the health area. This program actually serves individuals from all over the world. When we started, we did a pilot with Latino nurses, but at the present time, we have individuals from all continents. We focus mainly on nurses. And I wanted to ask you, how many of you know doctors, engineers, accountants, nurses who are actually cleaning houses, driving cabs, doing all kinds of jobs? Okay. So what this program, what we do is we work with these individuals and we help them to facilitate licensure, either to go back into their original profession or to insert themselves into the health field. So that's why we call it the Welcome Back. Welcome back to your profession. Now, in Maryland, we're working specifically with nurses, and we would be working with doctors and other professionals fairly soon. And we facilitate the path to licensure for nurses by providing individualized case management, English instruction, paid internships at local hospitals so that the nurses can learn the technology and the healthcare delivery model here in the United States. And we also provide financial support to cover costs associated with the licensure process. Our Maryland Welcome Back Center is one of 10 centers across the country that is offering this service at this time. So, what the Welcome Back Centers do basically is we address the shortage of health professionals. We know there's a shortage. There is a severe shortage of minority health professionals. So we are enhancing the capacity to provide bicultural and bilingual services. We improve health outcomes. It is presumed that if you have a workforce that mirrors the population that you're serving, that your health outcomes are going to improve. And we have a tremendous change in wages. As you can see here, it's about 200% increase from the moment somebody starts in a program until they get hired as a registered nurse. This immediately places people into different tax brackets. So we've been doing a study with the Department of Labor in the state of Maryland, and we found out that by the end of the program, when the participants start paying taxes, the first year the program will pay itself for all the services that we provided. So it's an excellent program in that sense. Oh, one thing I needed to say is this year we received the E Pluribus Unum Award, given by the Migration Policy Institute for Immigrant Integration this year. We have a Latino youth wellness program that focuses on high-risk youth. These are mainly middle-aged kids. We work with the parents and also the children to improve wellness. And one of the main goals is we want these kids to remain in school, graduate, go to college. We have a system navigator and medical interpreting program. Basically, it's two components. One is a bilingual line that helps callers to access needed services in the community. Last year, we responded to about 5,000 calls, and about 75% of the callers accessed services. And the medical interpreters are providing services at community clinics for individuals with limited English proficiency, mainly Latinos. We have a community engagement work group that it's one of the most recent projects that we have. It's under the steering committee. Basically, the whole aim is to engage communities in finding solutions. And so part of what the community engagement work group does is it provides leadership training. It provides basic training on civil rights, responsibilities, how to advocate, how the system works. And so what we have been able to do is to bring the community engagement work of people to advocate on behalf of the community. One of the recent accomplishments we had was a better enhancement of service eligibility units in the Department of Health and Human Services. Okay, so in summary, and I wanted to talk because somebody was asking, well, what does it take and what are the different things that you would recommend to a successful approach to enhance health and equity? So one of the key things for us is the systemic community participation. It is so important that communities engage in identifying the problems, posing solutions, and advocating on their own behalf. To me, the issue of bringing diverse strategies and programs is critical. I think if we just focus on one angle and just provide information or just have, one strategy, it doesn't serve. So to the extent possible, if we're able to have comprehensive strategies that should work, having partnerships, let's hope it doesn't get messed up. Establishment of partnerships has been critical for us, and we've been able to maintain this level of services to our community due to the fact that we have community partnerships all over. And basically, by offering this, three bullets, this is just too funny. As long as you involve the community, have a multi-angle approach, and establishing the partnerships, I think that helps to give sustainability to many of these efforts because you're building capacity in the community. So we hope that even though, even if LHI wasn't here, but we know that the committee is already working with this. And finally, just my contact information. And just a plug, in Maryland, we just this year passed the DREAM Act. And this was a tremendous effort. Yeah, this is a huge accomplishment.